that will take the first to the members' commissions and the men sign the first council that yes. Then we then can then have one or two refugees or asylum seekers in between that, so that you know, we are able to balance the deal, the money to get the balance of the issue. Thank you very much. You will introduce yourself and the organization you represent.
Honourable members of Parliament, distinguished guests, all Africans, sisters and brothers, ladies and gentlemen. I am Judith Kern, I'm the head of the parliamentary program of the South African Human Rights Commission. I'm joined today with the G7 members of our PMEA from the Western Cape office. We've been working tirelessly in the last few weeks to assist with the xenophobic crisis. I'm also joined with 8 residents from Young Steel's military base, who are non-nationals and who have been displaced by violence, and I'm very aware that they would like to take advantage of the opportunity to speak during the course of today as well, and also by one of the voluntary community workers who assisted to bring the non-nationals through today. For the purpose of time, I think I will stick to my written statements which I've made, and will go quicker. I have made copies available for all members of staff and also the reports which I will be referring to. The outbreak of xenophobic violence that has turned South Africa into a crisis during the past week is unprecedented, in that never before in world history have such large numbers of foreign nationals, many of whom are refugees and asylum seekers, become internally displaced persons. It is difficult to describe how the past few weeks have summoned energies and skills that we never knew we had, and how quickly the situation is changing, calling for constant reassessment and responses. The South African Human Rights Commission officers have been a hive of activity, as like government, civil society, and the general public, we have grappled to deal with the crisis, which is highly complex in so many ways and keeps changing every few hours. At each turn, new challenges keep arising which we must address. International Refugee Day today provides a moment of reflection on what is happening in South Africa. The xenophobic crisis of recent weeks signifies how we have perhaps underestimated the enormity of the amount of human rights work and transformation that is still needed in South Africa. We still have much work to do in South Africa on issues of social inclusion, exclusion, social cohesion, discrimination, and national identity in terms of who we are as a country and how we are part of the African continent. We are up in the 30th, the Miracle Rainbow Nation. However, that sparkling rainbow faded, dripping in shame and blood tattered in the winter gale north wind. Our challenge therefore goes beyond restoring the dignity and rights of those non-nationals who have become victims of xenophobic violence, questioning the levels of understanding, tolerance, and acceptance that exists amongst all who live in this country. A crisis calls for deep humility by all actors. A crisis is a crisis as it is an occurrence out of the ordinary and one which is not planned for. It is therefore to be expected that there will be many mistakes that are made while addressing the crisis. Within this milieu, the Commission itself has to look at its role and to determine as a constitutional institution how best we go about carrying out our constitutional mandate to promote, protect, and to monitor human rights. I will share with you just some of the activities that we have been involved in. These have ranged from preventative activities, particularly here in the Western Cape, trying to avert the violence breaking out here. We have also been participating actively with the civil society task team, which has formed down here in the Western Cape. But possibly where we have been most active is in our role of monitoring. We developed training materials, conducted training, recruited and trained volunteers, the first time in the history of the Commission that we have used volunteers, and we sent them out to the various camps that have been established in the Western Cape, and we issued monitoring reports. We conducted a monitoring report on the Young Steel military base, and as the Minister mentioned, women are particularly affected by violence, and we actually used as the basis of that report interviews with women. As the poet said, I go to the toilet, you go to the toilet, the women at Young Steel camp are scared to go to the toilet in the middle of the night because it is dark and they're fearful of their safety. We've also, for example, conducted a report which we released yesterday on the foreshore overpass. The Minister also referred to the chains still coming to Cape Town, and we strongly urge the Minister to read that report, which really does point to shocking conditions that are currently at the foreshore overpass, where people went at the pickup point in order to go and receive their documentation. The framework in which we write these reports are for constructive dialogue to assist all the actors in this process and to point out the human rights concerns and how we should be dealing with the crisis in a human rights framework. We have also begun with providing very specifically tailored refugee training materials to the non-nationals who have been affected. We receive a constant mantra wherever we go with refugees saying to us, we want to know our rights, we want to know our rights, we do not have enough information. We have also assisted with facilitating communication with camp leadership in order to inform them of their rights, but in also other events such as negotiating the end of hunger strikes, diffuse intense situations, or as when I met the Honourable Charles K. down to Footbatter, nearly sitting in the dirt with leadership whilst they are despairing and encouraging them to remain and to have some hope for their future. We've also been interacting at a number of levels with various government departments. What have we identified as some of our major challenges? Some of the challenges are well documented in the Western Cape. The establishment of the large camps at areas very far outside of Cape Town, these two camps being geographically isolated, also the fact that their tests on beaches do not make them suitable places to meet people. I've already mentioned the constant mention of lack of information, but also communication from government. We keep on being told in our travels, no government official has come and spoken to us. We have also picked up that there appears to be, in many cases, a lack of a participatory, consultative approach by government and even camp management in including refugees, in allowing them to have a voice to resolve these issues which they are dealing with. It is their future, and they would like to be able to be part of the planning and an opportunity to voice what will become of their future. We've also started picking up an issue of concern is that in dealing with conflict in these camps and safety sites, that there appears to be a move in some instances towards a police approach rather than a resolution of conflict approach, with camp leadership then being arrested on charges of intimidation, whereas in many of these instances, and I will note there may well be some criminal elements, but in the vast majority of these instances, it is merely a lack of communication. One leader in the Western Cape area was arrested after a particularly tense situation broke out when the persons who were in charge of food decided that the bread was soggy that morning, that they could not give the food to the non-nationals. A South African official joked and said that he was taking the food to his house. That's a very bad joke to make to someone who is hungry. It led to the situation getting tense in the camp, to then some of the non-nationals attempting to burn down a tent and people being arrested. What was needed there was immediate good conflict negotiations to ensure that people's frustrations do not spill over into such acts. In terms of moving forward and some of our recommendations, and we're pleased by some of the announcements that the Minister made here this morning, we have called for an immediate and an unequivocal moratorium on arrest and deportation. We are still uncertain as to how government officials down on the ground will determine who a person is who has been affected by the violence if they are not in the safety site and they have already reintegrated. We would also recommend the closure of these large camps and that we move people closer to the community, that this will facilitate reintegration at a far faster pace. We'd also call on government to provide a comprehensive plan of all the government departments. It's not just foreign affairs and home affairs that have to deal with these issues. It goes to social development, education, and almost every government department. There's also a strong need need to develop conflict management systems within the camps and safety sites between the non-nationals themselves, between the non-nationals and the volunteers, between the non-nationals, the volunteers, and the government officials there, but also for there to be more conflict resolution experts on the ground who can deal with conflict immediately as there is a situation which arises at one of these sites. We'd also recommend that there be more regular, sufficient, and accurate information being distributed to all displaced persons by nationals and by governments. There also needs to be adequate consultation with and participation in all decisions by governments that affect the non-nationals, particularly in relation to reintegration. There cannot be forced reintegration or transfer to safe sites. There's a need for us to embrace the UNHCR and to keep asking them to provide us with greater assistance and advice, particularly technical expertise that can assist us with reintegration and issues around conflict management and diversity. We also need to become aware as to what the minimum standards are at the safety site, and these need to be developed and articulated in order that when we conduct monitoring of these safety sites, we are aware. Sorry, it can be. In conclusion, then, expressions of xenophobia undermine the values of our institution and infringe the dignity of both perpetrator and victim. As a South African society, we must ask how united we are in our diversity. The xenophobic violence will be a stain on our society forever. However, we need to ensure that the manner in which we deal with the crisis lays the foundation for the healing and the transformation that's still necessary in this country. This is why the issues raised here today are so important. The framework in terms of which we deal with the crisis must be solidly grounded in a human rights framework that respects the dignity of all persons. I thank you.
We conducted focus groups in Mamelodi, in Alexander Township and in Gambisa. And we did focus group interviews in Imezamo Yetu in the Western Cape. And without burning the house with the entire contents of the report is available on the website of the Human Sciences Research Council. I merely want to highlight a few aspects of it which I think might be useful for the discussion today. One of the striking themes that runs through the focus group interviews that we received, that we got, and the views that were expressed in the focus groups, was a dissatisfaction that is quite widespread with the style of governance that communities experience. Now, perceptions, whether they may be true or false, whether they have a material or factual basis, matter in a democracy, because we know that the democracy rules by consent and not by coercion. In other words, if we want the cooperation of any of our citizens for implementing any of our policies, we need their cooperation. We need them to feel that we use our power and authority in a way that they feel is legitimate. There is a worrying view that emerges from the focus groups we've done that there is a decline in the sense of legitimacy that many people perceive government to have. And that is a communication issue which I think has already been flagged in the first presentation. We need to be able to communicate to citizens in a way that they feel empowered, and this was something that was strongly communicated to us. So our report really shares with the public the views that emerge from these communities. The South African Social Attitude Survey, which the HSRC runs annually, documents from 2003 onwards, and the graph you will see in the report, a sharp increase in sentiments of intolerance towards foreign nationals, particularly in urban informal settlements, a rise from 33 to 47% from 2003 to 2007. It's a dramatic graph line that should have been a warning sign. And there are, of course, numerous studies that were done since 1994 documenting incidences of xenophobia and xenophobic violence. Again, communication. The information has been out there. How do we channel it in ways that it can be heard, that it can inform policy more effectively? I would like to briefly go through the recommendations of the report, because I think that these are the important aspects of it that might be appropriate for this forum. We felt that, and we are heartened by the comments of the Minister of Home Affairs about some of the recommendations that are already on the table. We felt that one of the huge areas of concern is the vulnerability of illegal foreign nationals. To that extent, unregistered or illegal residents are deeply vulnerable to manipulation, to criminal exploitation, to prejudice, and to violence. Their vulnerability in communities makes them susceptible to entering into relations where they become victims. For example, the rental of RTP houses illegally to foreign nationals means that they are transferring money to South African citizens, yet the contract through which they have entered into that agreement has no legal binding, no legal effect. So it makes them particularly vulnerable. So we feel that this is an urgent issue that needs to be addressed, the vulnerability of illegal foreign nationals in the country. And to that extent, the discussion that is underway here today with the consideration of proposals for how we do that is important. Of course, we would need an effective system of border control, but we would also need an effective system of administration of that. We suggest a amnesty for foreign nationals who are in the country illegally so that they can be registered, and that there's a formalized process that can be undertaken towards that effect. That would be one way of making those who are here less vulnerable in the immediate term. We believe, and this was a view that was widely shared in many of the communities that we interviewed, that the Department of Home Affairs is riddled with corruption. This was the view that we expressed. and this was the perception of the communities, and that would be something that would have to be addressed. The systems that are in place will have to be more effectively implemented, but also the public image of the department will have to be addressed. There were numerous citations of experiences that people had of Home Affairs officials who were acting unethically, to put it politely. The other recommendation we make, and there's a huge debate, of course, about the relationship between foreign nationals and jobs in South Africa, and there is a perception in South African communities that foreign nationals are taking jobs, and there are studies that will show that foreign nationals, in fact, take jobs. But what we found that was that there was a certain credibility to some of the claims around jobs when they pertain to certain categories of work, and that is particularly casual labor. So communities, for example, in Imizamayedu, residents found that they were losing domestic work. They were losing work as gardeners. They were losing work as construction laborers to foreign nationals who were willing to work for a lower wage. That seemed to be a tangible and credible concern that would have to be addressed. One way to do that might be through a minimum wage regulation of casual labor itself, in order to reduce the competition for the amongst those who are already vulnerable with others who are vulnerable. This is creating particular tensions in communities. We believe it necessary at a very local level, develop incentivized schemes for partnerships that marry the skills of foreign nationals, which we are familiar with, and the initiative of foreign nationals, which we have seen, with local development programs, entrepreneurship programs, so that we can more effectively retain skilled foreign workers. Of course, we also believe that tied to these very local initiatives that have to do with improving material realities, we need the cultural interventions that have been spoken about that promote tolerance and diversity, that produce a sense of South Africanness that is more intimately connected to its African identity, South Africa's history of isolation from the continent has a severe effect, and the cultural reorientation of the country towards Africa is something that needs to be worked on. We also feel that it's important to consider tolerance and diversity within the context of the communities where these practices are being challenged in relation to their material reality. In other words, when does difference matter so much that it threatens somebody's identity so much that they feel the need to physically remove somebody, to kill somebody, the particular conditions under which that arise? And these, we look at the communities and the settlements where these practices are occurring, tell us something very particular. So we believe that any reintegration process will have to deal with the perceptions of the communities from which foreign nationals were expelled. And these grievances will have to be addressed. There's a very strong sense, as I said in the beginning, within these communities that they feel that their grievances are not being addressed, that in fact the education, that lighting of the fire that Yates spoke about, our opportunity to listen to what poor South African communities are telling us about how they feel, we might miss that education if we don't take into account addressing their grievances at the same time that we address the plight of the refugees and foreign nationals who have been displaced. Of course, in the end, the meaning that we give to our constitutional obligations, the idea of life and the dignity of life, we will be measured in that sense by how we treat those most vulnerable in the society. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I've been listening to the two human rights and the human rights and research. I think we're now beginning to deal with issues of rights. But let's hear from refugees themselves, asylum seekers. Because as we know that we have what we call refugees, even illegal immigrants are allowed in this meeting. So can we then afford you? Yes, ma'am. introduce yourself. I will take about two, and then when we finish with that, we'll then go back to the local leaders, especially the two leaders from Alexander, which was like more of a spark in that area. We want to hear their input too, which will then begin to give us another angle of their country. Thank you very much. We will take about two or three, you know, refugees or asylum seekers or illegal immigrants who are here. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Good morning to everybody. I do really appreciate to give me this opportunity to speak today. It's a big day today, and it's a sad day today as a refugee day. Right now, at the moment, I'm standing in front of you in my heart, deep in inside of my heart. I'm feeling sad on behalf of all the refugees in South Africa. I'm living right now into the camp in Mr. Youngfield, Mr. Camp. Women and children, refugees in the camp. It's really sad to see us, the dog today. We really spend tears on our eyes because the reason why we came in this country, South Africa, we came here for our peace and protection. But we came to find the dog today. We didn't get that peace and protection to us refugees. We are still crying tears in our eyes. We lost up everything. We're staying in the sad, critical condition. I would like to ask to the government in South Africa, we do really appreciate for all these years we living in this country, in South Africa, but we living in this country in sad, always pain in the heart, always pain in the mind. Okay, South African population are complaining that we are here to take their job, we are here to destroy. So as refugees, we are not here to come and destroy. We came here because we thought this is a democratic country which can provide all the refugees to get their rights and safe and protection. But to us, we came to find that our thing and our dream, it was wrong, it was very wrong thing, and it came a negative thing. We'd like to ask the South African government to deal with the refugees. You cannot deal with the refugees alone. South African government needs to deal with the refugees if we can welcome United Nations to help the way we can deal with the refugees. Because we are here today in the 20 refugees day, but for us, it's very sad day. We are hurting that the South African government wants to integrate us back to the community. We're living in the camp. We've got an example. There is a lot of refugees who are trying to go back to the community so that at least we can send encouraging other refugees women in the country that at least the government has done something. But right now, I'm standing in front of you. There is an example there by the camp. Those who are trying to go back to the community, they were saved with the knife, they were beaten, they were taking everything while they tried to go in. So to us as the refugees, women in South African children, we don't think that the really government promised us for our safety in this country. We don't think, we don't trust that those the new people are promising that if we go back to the community, we're going to be safe there. It's not safe to us. Please, we are pleading and asking and begging to South African government as the way you keep us on this, all these years in South Africa, 11 years. Some of the refugees are more than 11 years in South Africa and struggling. I think this is enough for us tears in our eyes because we left our country, which was the best country to us. The second country we fled to come for our protection and peace, which is South African country. And now we are still crying and tears in our eyes, tears in our face. Please, we are asking South African government, stand forward, you open your heart. Open your heart, you help refugees, women in South Africa to save our children's lives. You welcome United Nations to find solutions for the refugees because we see and we can see South African government. You cannot work and deal alone with the refugees. To deal with the refugees, you need a solution because this country is a democratic country. I don't think this country is a democratic country. We are living as a prison in this country. We have to have our rights, and we have to clear for our rights. We are pleading South African government to start. stand forward because our heart is broken. In the camp, we are having police coming and attack the refugees. And police is the government. When I saw police wearing uniform, it's really encouraging me that I saw someone who can protect me as a refugee. I saw someone who can protect refugees in South Africa. But that uniform to me is really representing what is heartbroken to me because we've been attacked with police themselves killing us. Run away from genocide, run away from xenophobia, coming to die in the camp with police attacking us. Please, we are pleading and ask on behalf of refugees women in South Africa and in South African children. Please, South African government, we are pleading you, stand forward and answer our prayers and answer our asking and wipe our tears in our faces, children. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I'm from Congo, Brazzaville. I'm actually representing the SAF refugee in the side of Millington. I came here in 1997, and I really want to, I'm calling on government, and I really want to thank the parliament and the ministers and the chairperson. Thanks very much for accepting us in this country. In 1997, some of the countries in Central Africa had many problems. And in my particular country, we had war where mothers and kids were killed and our mothers were raped. And we heard that the president and the government was part of the Freemason thing, where people give blood and people have to die so that they stay longer in power. Therefore, I was a student. It's my first time to be in the parliament today in my own country. I could never have the chance to stand in the parliament. I want to thank the Democracy of South Africa today to make me standing up here and speak about what we have. We hear about the refugee problems. And what I would like to say is, if we came here, we just need to be secure. And some of us are students, some of us are working, but we have problems like today in Zimbabwe where the government doesn't want to put things in place so that people can vote normal and get who they want to support the country. That's why people are running away. And we cannot go overseas because we are African. And we can only go to any other African country so that we can all live together and help each other. We got a dream to be united. We got our Indian people, our colored people. We need all to step up together and make Africa as one. We need one leader in all Africa, and we need to make one a change so that we can develop the whole Africa. The Congo needs the potentiality of South African people. And for the years we've been in South Africa, we don't have a proper pattern, so there's anything that we could do. Some of the people, they are musicians, some of the people, they work, study, they want to go for further studies, but we don't have the money and we cannot benefit of anything in South Africa. Therefore, we are asking the minister if he can help us, not with all these papers, but we want to be part of the community and we want to be part of the country. We know that South Africa is facing a lot of problems in this, the crisis, and I think foreigners also have got ideas to add up and help the government to deal with the situation. So we are asking the ministers just please help us and give us proper purpose we need. If we could be residents, we will have a chance to study in universities and learn from democracy and go tomorrow in Congo and change the country and help the mothers who are dying in Congo today. I want to speak about the Kenya countries. I want to speak about Somalians. we think we need to stand up for renews and try to make them being part of the solution in this conflict. We need you, South Africans, and we think if South Africa can help us, not just to put us aside in those camps, but we need to make a plan so that we can be part of the country and share our culture, because we got a culture where we believe a next person is a kind of a God standing in front of you. If you respect your next person and you can respect God, that's what we've learned. And we would love to be part of the situation. I've been here for 10 years. I only have my 2 years paper and there's nothing that I can really do. I wish we can get the residence for staying here for so long so that we can think what we can do and what plan we can make so that we can one day go back to our country and develop and set the democracy in our country. Thanks so much for helping us, and we will always go back. We will take nothing from here, but we want to learn from you so that we can go back in our country and make the democracy work for all the African countries. Thank you very much.
There. xenophobia can happen anytime, anywhere, any day. Not only in South Africa, but happen anywhere, any day. And I'm telling you, I'm Angolan almost to 14 years now. I'm still fighting with the minister to get my permanent residence. Everyone get that. Yes. I'm still fighting here. Thank you. And then, xenophobia can happen anywhere, anytime. And some political parties, I'm not accusing anyone, but some, because what I did see myself at the journalist, what the research I have done, these things only happen just instantly. Quick. I think something was planned, something was being planned. Needed the government, especially the intelligence of South Africa, the Minister of Intelligence is supposed to be here to listen to this message. Suppose that one, that means it's a wake up call for the South African government. Because Amadou for instance, he's a Kwalanga for almost 14 years. He's a Amadou Kwalanga. And I don't want to forget this. Thank you for the community of Langa. Thank you for the community of Langa for not touching anyone. And I want to be briefly. Thank you, the community of Langa. Maybe Langa, because the historical place in South Africa, in the years back when it was apartheid, they don't want to see blood again in Langa. And I want to congratulate those communities. This xenophobia is a wake-up call for the South African government, because not anyone who vocally walk here and then go to attack Makwerekwere. No way. That means the political parties, the government itself, and the political parties, special government, must be suspicious, must be good intelligence in South Africa. And when we start a shiwoke, I don't know if I'm pronouncing wrong, where would you my foreigner? No way, no foreigner. Mundo Miyama Abba. Israel led to Abba, Yukaya led to Abba in South Africa. Israel led to Abba. That means there is those people who have been influenced by some political parties, may could be influenced by political parties. I want the South African government to look after this problem. And another brief point I want to get is, because the time is gone, is concerning issuing the documents for permanent residence status, all those things. Well, the standing committee is working very hard, but anyway, not at all, because someone with 5 years, 7 years, 8 years, 14 years, for instance, myself, I'm 14 years. I have children. I'm looking after my children. Yeah, it's a big, big problem to carry the status issue now. Well, I think a little bit impossible. Thank you very much.
Apologize for our mother's apartment.
signal did not only came to Alexander after 1994, as some people would also give impression, but they've been there for many years to grow up with foreign nationals. Some we even forget that they are foreign nationals. That is why this thing affected us most of us. Chair, I would like also to say we agree with one of the recommendations that has been tabled by the team that went in this case on these issues. One of the areas is that there is an issue that we need to have an awareness campaign on these issues. I think this will help, Chair, because if you look at my age, I'm just 6 years old, and I've never been out of South Africa in my life at this stage. So, all what I know about Zimbabwe, Mozambique, or South Africa, or any other neighboring countries, is what I read from papers or see on TV. I've never been to that country, or to those countries. And we had these perceptions as South Africans, ordinary South Africans, to say, when you leave South Africa, going to Zambia, and you say you are going to Africa, because you don't think South Africa is in Africa. You think South Africa is separate from the rest of Africa. So when this transformation came, this new democracy came in South Africa, there was no program that were implemented vigorously to introduce the rest of South African society to the rest of Africa. Institutions like human rights commissions and so on, those institutions would have played a very significant role in teaching our people about human rights, but also respecting the rights of foreign nationals. But unfortunately, those institutions do not operate in our country. There are just institutions existing from nationals, and we'll only see them when they want to give opinions about what is happening in our community. Without experiencing those issues and those activities, or interacting with communities themselves. I think those are areas, Chair, that we would want the government to pay more attention to and make sure that these institutions go down to communities and start the process of teaching our people about human rights, about the fact that South Africa is a signatory to United Nations. Therefore, we have to abide by those decisions that are taken internationally. Because one of the issues which caused that this violence become more strong in Alex, because Alex was not the only area where it started. In fact, it did not start there. It started in Pretoria. But in Alex, because there is development that is taking place there. So people also use this xenophobia as an opportunity to also contest for those opportunities that are being delivered by government. Hence, you'll realize that one of the targeted areas within ADEX was the new development areas in Extension 7, where people were evicted from their houses and so on. Being labeled as foreign nationals. But the unfortunate situation is that you'll find people in government who use an opportunity to score political points on the disaster that Alexander was facing. Unfortunately, that was an unfortunate situation because at the height of that violence, there were political parties running around the attack, trying to justify these attacks by saying houses and others are being allocated to foreign nationals. They were collecting numbers, house numbers and so on, sending people's names to newspapers, they were printed in newspapers and so on, victimizing those individuals. Because when Simango's name appeared on a Star newspaper, as a foreign national, obviously someone will be attacked on that day. So that is an unfortunate situation. We have political parties that are irresponsible. When we need to solve the situation, instead they use But when it comes to the issue of the refugees going back to their original areas, that in other, when this thing happened, we had about 510 people who were displaced. Currently, people that are in tents are about 100 and there's something, I'm not sure of the number now. Most of them have returned to their places. In Alex, the estimation that we have in terms of foreign nationals that are there is plus minus 50,000 people, but only 510 are displaced. So that shows also that not every foreign national was displaced in Alex. Not all foreign nationals were affected by this virus. It just affected the entire community, whether they are foreign national or not. On the second day, it just affected everyone. But in terms of people displaced, there was very little number of people that were displaced. But gradually, we are taking them back to their areas. The areas where we still face challenges are the areas where, because of perceptions that we have, they are deemed to be dangerous. So in such areas, we have to work tirelessly trying to check if possible for those people to go back, or we should look for alternative areas for them to go back, because you can't send people in an area where you are also not even sure if that it is safe for them to go back. So, but you are working tirelessly with IFP leaders to try and address those issues. So in short, is to say we also want to thank the government, how they responded, how they helped us, but also for them allowing us to take control of the situation and address the situation, because that was our request meeting. Because every time you see a minister coming to Alex, there will be a lot of media, BBC, 702, and on that day there will be excitement from these young kids. Then we'll have a problem. So we made a special request from our leaders to say, allow the candidates to address the situation. When we are facing challenges, we will immediately communicate to our leaders. And we appreciate that they listened to us. They gave us an opportunity to deal with the matter. They gave us a space to work on these issues. That has, we have a solution to what happened. Chair, I will stop there, and maybe that gentleman next to me will also add something. Thank you. Thank you.
kunobugebengu okukhulu obudlala indima lezo ngoba kukhona namanje abasafuna ukuqhubeka ngoba bona bayazi ngabenefita ngalezi so ke into ebalulekile especially yithi kuma-South African la mali edalakhona ey'ndaweni sengicabanga ukuthi thina noLinda hhayi noma nesinomanga sifane seyishaleke nesoko ngoba sekwenzise lokho ezimele efana nalezi kuba khona imine ekhomba abantu hayi lehezwela abantu bosokudisa lesi ngoba isipika lesokugcina besikhuluma la sikhuluma indaba zokuthi political parties and so forth and so forth into esiyayijwayelekile kuba khona uma kunezimo efana lezi kodwa sikwazile ukuthi sikhohlwe ukuthi sibuya ey'nhlanganweni ezehlukene ngoba phela eqinisweni ukuthi noma singaba iy'nhlangano ezehlukene we're not enemies sihambalangana lapha nangombona kodwa uma isimo sesiyiday'mpelo zabantu fanesisukume sime sikhuze lokho bokungelula-ke nokho bokungelula okudinga ukuthi sibambisane kakhulu sikwazile ukumelana nesimo esibhekene ngaso ngoba okunye-ke ngifuna ukusho uminister ukuthi ezinye zekhala abantu bebezisho esingasho ukuthi kufanele ukuthi ithi abantu fana bahlwenzakale iyo ishu yekhambi ukuthi bethi hhayi laba abantu bangaphandle laba bayaganga nje labenze inini bajike babaleke bona abalandela abaseshwakananga iqiniso lithi akuvumelaneni ezi-South African we agree abafowethu babekhona la baxoshwe zinkinga zabo abanazo njena futhi nabo siyacela even those leaders abo ukuthi ma besika lapha nabo abayithathe ngendlela efanele ubugebengu nabo ababuyeke ngoba abazazi lokhetha ngaphezu kwabaphosha abantu ngingavumelana nomthosho ubamele ukuthi ikhona ngale phinga abantu abazothatha imisebenzi yethu bathathela abafazi bashoasemayinini izinto ezingalasezi kodwa ke nabo iqiniso ukuthi abakuyeke ukugama uma sebefike ngaphakathi nje ngoba iqiniso lokuthi nabe baba involved ey'ntweneni zogama uma ukuthi obanje inkunzi kukuphi abantu abathathi baku-South Africa abayithuba somaza ekeni babalekile abantu so ke izinto efana lezo-ke nazo fane siyikhulumele ukuthi bakhwenu asiyiyeke ukuzenza kodwa sihlale e-South Africa sonke ama-African kanti-ke futhi okunye nabo babeyingxenye angithi nithi bakhwethu la usekhaya usese-Africa so ibanike ingxenye nani eyibele ukuhlala ewodini yabo into yenziwe ewodini iyenze nawe ewodini bakungabethi ezikoleni lasezoni bethu kwazi kwenzekayo so nabantu manje nawuzolibanza ukuthi kukhona labayaa kwezokunye ezakhona so ke yilokho nje ngingakusho-ke bakhwethu ukuthi siyaxolisa siyathemba minister ukuthi hhayi ngokuyifeni emnyama elizokwenzeka kodwa elisivulamele ngoba kuyiqiniso kukhona okuningi esifundile kule nto eyenzekile okufaneke siqikelele ukuthi-ke amaphutha akhona nanani ayalungiswa sedlule sephambi angibonge kakhulu ngethokoza
Okay.
going to work in South Africa in those days. And therefore, this was used to demonstrate the fact that he grew up with foreigners, and that has never been an issue. He then indicated that, in fact, this situation gave criminals the possibility to pursue their criminal activities. But then he emphasized that despite the challenges of the fact that they belong to different organizations in the community, when there's a situation that threatens the lives of the community, it's incumbent upon the leaders of that community to come together and work together to resolve the problem, as opposed in them concerned with the differences of their organization. And he said that in Alex, they had to shift their identities as different organizations and work together to confront what was the problem. He says what is important is that our colleagues from the other countries, they themselves, they have an obligation. Their obligation is to behave as good citizens, that they themselves should desist engagement in criminality, because that in itself makes them vulnerable. He then made an example to say that in an event where you find that there was a criminality involved, you find that it's a combination of South Africans and foreigners. And the tendency is that because foreigners, they are probably illegal, they are able to then shift out of the situation undetected without anyone knowing who they are and what they were doing. And only South Africans then remain because they can be traceable. He then said that it's important for people to, that when they arrived in the country, they must stay as citizens and behave in a manner that is acceptable to the citizen. He says that all the issues that have been raised about the fact that people take people's rights and they take the work, those are things that get thrown out as the cause of the problem, but does not believe that those things are material enough to have warranted the situation. And therefore, they should also be taken note, but to emphasize the fact that people must then also desist from criminality. The last critical point that he has raised is the fact that when foreign nationals are within South African communities, they must stop excluding themselves from the activities of that community. They must seek to involve themselves to the activities of the community. If you stay in a ward, and the councillor convenes a meeting, you should participate in those activities so that you can be integrated to the community and not exclude yourself, because that in itself, that exclusion that you are doing makes you vulnerable, because it stops you from being integrated. And he indicated that we've learned from our mistakes, and we've learned from this situation. And what we've learned will then help us to deal with it in future. And again, he reiterated the fact that our apology to all those who have been affected, it was not intentional, it happened unexpectedly. There's a saying, Jefferson, that this is Zulu, I still don't know, I cannot interpret Zulu. So what I've told you is what I think he said.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I think we have now hear about the issue of the rights. Human rights, the first concern, the findings and recommendations of government. We have heard the experience so far from the refugees themselves. We're still going to open more experiences and meetings of this. We have now heard the role that the local leadership plays. So critical to this input, it then starts to tell you how we must begin to gel together to a point that we can probably talk of integration at some point. But we hear from you as well. invited local government. We've invited the main five cities, Durban, Cape Town, Gauteng. And I'm not sure if they're here.
Okay.
We'll give you, we just wanted to know if you are here. Because at some point, you'll have to come in. Based on the question of integration. The issue of the rights, I think, as we know, when we did the amendment last week, one of the critical things that came out of that amendment is to emphasize the issue of the rights. What are the rights? What are the rights? But we'll talk about it as we move forward. On that note, can I call upon the International Organization of Migration to give us an input now? We have not yet touched the UNHCR. We need them at some point to give us an input. And then we come to that part and then listen to their role and how they understand and make their own recommendations on how we should move forward. Thank you. You introduce yourself.
Thank you very much. I'm Hans Dietbo. I'm the regional representative for the International Organization for Migration, based in Pretoria. IOM is an intergovernmental organization with 125 member states, of which South Africa itself has been a member since 1997. And we have been present in South Africa since about the time when the exiles returned in the early 90s. Chairman, getting a bit uneasy halfway into the proceedings, realizing that I had been placed on the side of the floor that's usually occupied by the loyal opposition. I was then going to remark to the minister before she left that they bear to cross over. And then I found that most of the speakers on this side have been very favorable towards government. And in fact, I've been quite comfortable staying where I am. I've also, with some uneasy, noted that my prepared statement going to be entirely insufficient compared to the very warm and heartfelt words that have come from people behind me as well as from the ministers and yourselves. But I will present a very brief set of remarks for these proceedings and then go ahead to listen to the rest of the proceedings with you all. Thank you very much for inviting IOM to make a presentation. Some observations on the occasion of this important seminar taking place on the World Refugee Day. And may I pay tribute to my friend and colleague from UNHCR sitting on the other side on the occasion of this very important day, which I know his organization is celebrating in every country where they are present. First of all, let me say that IOM, as well as the entire UN country team in South Africa, have been involved in efforts to support all spheres of government in addressing the needs of victims of the recent violence against foreigners in many provinces. Initially, this consisted in convening crisis meetings among the UN agencies and principal NGOs based in South Africa, such as Chapter 9 institutions, the Red Cross, the South African Council of Churches, and others, in an effort to have coordinated response by the humanitarian community. Second, several agencies, including UNHCR, IOM, UNICEF, and a number of NGOs, provided relief material to the affected populations. Third, we participated in assessment missions and planning meetings at provincial and local level in Gauteng, Western Cape, and KwaZulu-Natal. Honorable members and colleagues, last Tuesday, four members of the UN country team, including myself, were received in Fahrenheit by Minister with the Presidency, and by the Ministers of Home Affairs, Education, and Safety and Security. At that occasion, we were able to reflect on the considerable progress achieved by the various layers of government in a relatively brief period of time in terms of humanitarian response and disease. Also, in the space of a few weeks, although many are still waiting for help to return, tens of thousands of foreign residents have already managed to return voluntarily section of their home country. While initially there were unmet gaps because of the sheer speed of the development, the majority of those gaps have been filled and it's time to look ahead. Matters arising now include bringing justice to the perpetrators of the attacks against foreigners as soon as possible. To ensuring continued security and protection of the displaced people in shelters. 3, commencing a structured facilitation and support for reintegration into communities. And 4, addressing an exit strategy and one that aims at reducing the possibility for further, a future recurrence of the violence. These were points raised at the meeting at Toynhurst on Tuesday. Honourable members and participants, many notable persons have already spoken and written about the fact that xenophobia is not a recent trait in the South African social fabric, nor in violent crime. The challenges facing government and society therefore go way beyond just cleaning up after the recent incident. One hopes that the country will remain steadfast and continue to educate against xenophobia and racism, to provide social and economic incentives to bring an end to abject poverty, bring a sense of dignity to all in poor areas, both rural and urban, and ensure that impunity is not an option for perpetrators of violent crime, and at last, but not least, ensure access to some kind of permit and ID papers for all foreigners who can be entitled to them. It is of particular importance, not just in times of crisis, to manage immigration to South Africa in a rights-based way that encourages and facilitates access to public services, employment, and education. Here we must salute Home Affairs for introducing a temporary permit for protection of displaced immigrants in shelters. With the emerging migration policy trends in SADC, heading more towards liberalized migration, it testifies that more and more states recognize the benefits of more open migration and human mobility in general, along with more open trade and globalization of the skills market, things that Deputy Minister Van der Merwe also referred to. One cannot only control immigration away, and indeed adding more stringent border control mechanism and visa restrictions might simply send more of presumptively honest and law-abiding people into the hands of smugglers and traffickers, and later to live underground in miserable conditions, leading in turn detention cycles we have seen. The challenge really is to manage migration for the benefit of all, however in a balanced way that also ensures that national security concerns of the state are also addressed. Honourable members and friends, my organizations and others in the UN, mothers in the UN family will continue to work with all interested branches of government and the civil society of South Africa wherever appropriate to help finding durable solutions for all those affected by recent events, and to participate in any efforts to combat xenophobia and racism. I can tell you now that IOM is launching a funding appeal these days to enable us to make meaningful contributions, and we will consult closely with the government departments and civil society in this regard. Honourable Chairpersons, members, thank you very much for your attention.
They can be followed immediately by Dr. Kamal. Okay. Thank you very much. Later it came back again. When it came back, we were the leaders of this country.
we heard about that delegates, I was one of them, was phoned by a lady from Belgium, and then we called the police. I told the police, and then the police, they said, yeah, they are alert, they know what's going to happen. The police are in the community. But we were so shocked to see that they took some from the family shops away, and then they were safe. And then later, they couldn't control the community because it was only the few police from Ocean View Police Station. And then you can imagine the community of more than 50,000 population, the young people, they couldn't control them. So they managed to distract other shops, I'm sure there are a few shops. And then the following day, that was Friday afternoon, we called a meeting, and then that meeting, it was only for prayer. Because we didn't like what was happening, and then it was something that we couldn't control it. So we preferred to pray to God, to ask God to help us. So on Saturday, we came again to a meeting. It's when we decided to go to Sudbader, to go to apologize to our fellow foreigners. And then we were helped by our government. Like, Baba Ramasakani was always there in our community to help us when we have our meetings. And then we would be so from the premier's office. And then even the premier himself was there. So on Sunday, we brought a declaration. We went to Sudbader to apologize to them and also to take them back to the community, because we discovered that it was done by the young people, and then there was no reason for that. It was something like a crime, not xenophobia. So the same day, that Sunday, we brought some of them to the community. Very late, at about 6, there was a bus that was organized to bring some of them again, more than 40 people who came back to Matomelele. Of course, in the morning on Sunday, there were a flood of them coming back to the community, those who went to stay to their employers. So, in Matomelele, because of the leadership, like what happened in Alexandra, I was also from Alice, I've got your cards, I'm still using it to live in the community. So when we're placing them back to their communities, we make sure that the owner, the landlord are still alright, they're still positive, and then we make sure that we deliver them house to house. And then the Somali business people couldn't come same time because they have to rebuild their structures, some of them, not all of them, so the others were waiting for them. For them, those who don't have even the stock, some of the other shops are not yet open. I want to come to the government again. I'm happy that if there is a gentleman there, I would like to see you after this, that they've been to hold me. Because the problem lies with our young people. They really don't know where they're coming from. Why are the people who are not South African are here? Of course, there is that job problem. Because the white employers, they used to say there are spots where they come to get people, like for instance, like Pick and Pay Center. When they go there, they would like to employ only the foreigners and leave the South Africans there. So they are creating something, they are also the initiators of the problem. So we would like if also the young people can be taught in, maybe at school level, so that they can understand why other people are here, why are our people, because our people are not here in South Africa, they're still out of the country. So we're still busy because we heard that 2 days after the Somali back, there was some shootings, and then they took something that was very small because he was only one day in his shop. And then we've heard that there is also another shooting, so we investigated. We brought the case to the police, so we're waiting for the police to investigate. Some people have seen that a young man. So we are waiting in the community. Don't sleep. At my age, I don't sleep because we want peace in our community. And then we've been staying with them, as the father was saying, that he's been in Langa for a long time. We've been staying with them for a long time. They are like our brothers, like our sisters. And then to the lady who's from the camp, we've got also a Somali lady who's got four children. They like steps, you see. We make sure that we defend such people in our community, but we don't have enough space for them to stay. But those are staying with us, they are safe. Of course, there is crime in everywhere, because not only Somali shops that are taking everybody who's got money, like cell phones there in the morning and in the evening. But we are still fighting that, because all the structures are together, even the different political parties, we are together. So we also would like to have people like you to help our children. Because at the end of the day, like what happened in 2006, some of those boys are not heavy. They only play on the street, they cannot work, they cannot go to school because they're frustrated. So even now, I'm trying to help them by giving them skills and some jobs. Those people who were telling them to do that, because before it was them, our business people, because they couldn't understand why they cannot do their businesses when the rest of the can do their businesses. So they don't understand. Even now, in France, there were a lot of young people. Of course, they were. And that, we don't know why they do that. So we'd like that a program to come also to Mpumelele, if it's possible. Thank you.
Thank you. Quite a very important role that is played by the candidates. But now the issue of youth comes in. The issue of employers who are exploiting most of the time comes in. But yeah, it's yourself who are in parliament, members at some point, will give them opportunity, you know, to raise and to clarify and to recommend some of the things. But we will still have more time to engage the community level, but we'll give members an opportunity to support let me do this. We are told that we have within the next 10 minutes we'll have to break for lunch. What I was trying to do was to give most the key organizations that we have identified to make input. But I see that there are a few hands from the floor. So what I'm going to do, let's take the first three hands. We still have a number of local government that has not come in, COSATO, Black Fresh, Africa Unite, Center for Studies for Violence Department. You know, there are quite a number of people that speak. In fact, that is our day today. We will not celebrate as a normal of music. Then we have to address a problem. And I think all of us will be patient. We have to give each other an opportunity. Speak. At the end of the day, Parliament will have to be seized with all of these issues that we have raised, and then they will respond. So I've seen let me start with that hand there, followed by the hand in Japan, and yourself, sir, and then I'll take I'll come to you, and I'll take yourself, the time, because I can identify you very easily. Fine. Let's take those hands. We'll give you an opportunity again. Can you start with you, Sam? Just introduce yourself if you speak.
Yeah. Thank you very much for the opportunity. My name is Alex Kili. I'm from the church, Jubilee Dominican Church in Observatory. It is really a pleasure to be in a platform like this where you have a chance to express yourself and to hear from other people what is happening in the ground. We, as refugees, have been in South Africa for almost 2 decades. I've been here from 1991 person who has this qualification, I will resign from my job and leave it to him. And the physician said, here is an opportunity for you to get your job back. No one called and no one could take that job. We creating jobs, as one has mentioned here, we're creating jobs, we're creating a lot of opportunities for South Africa as well. Not just that we take him or that we grab him staff, but the refugee never has an opportunity. You come to a country where there's no support. I mean, you as a refugee, you run away from your country, you get to a country where you feel like this is where I can be secure. The only thing you get is a piece of paper. With that paper, you have nowhere to stay, you have no money to live with, you have nothing. So you have to build up a system by yourself how to live. That means we go out there and find a way to live. We find a job. We find anything that we can, which is legal, to help ourselves. But you go around, I don't know if you have ever had experience to go to the bank, and then you take what is given to us in the paper, ask you what, where's your ID, and you give you two white papers and give it to them. And the person look at on this side and turn it around and turn it and ask you what is this. Those are the experiences that we going through every day. You go to department area, even the office, you ask me, so you speak to people, this is my problem. My daughter is supposed to go to Australia for a conference, which was called by the school, that she has to attend a youth conference in Australia. It takes us 4 months to deal with the Home Affairs just for that late girl to get a passport to go to Australia. And we never get it, she never goes. But you're dealing with people, you communicate with them, they don't come back to you, you raise your issue, nobody really cares. We go on the street, they look at you, the way you dress, the way you look. People just look at you twice, and that is not a comfortable way of living in a foreign place. We accept that it's not everybody that are doing that, but most of the refugees, most of the foreigners in South Africa are victims in one way or another of situation that has happened in their lives. It doesn't. I thank God that the recent issue actually brought it to light that we can sit here today, but this has been happening every day, even before what you call the xenophobia or attack on foreign people. It's been happening every day. We're really grateful that we can have this platform to express ourselves, learn a little bit that growth, even if we need a sharp love. Today we thank you for having us along. Thank you.
There are people that I've noticed. I just want to give the example here because I know that this for all of you. And let me give you just maybe the meeting with the TV. Just give him to make you think of it. Then I'll help you. Well, I can give
you a question. Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thanks for the understanding. I'm glad that